May the words of my mouth, meditations of all our hearts, always be acceptable in your sight. O Lord, our strength and our salvation. Amen. The Buddha is to have remarked to his disciples that understanding his instructions is a dangerous business. Picking up on one of his teachings, he said, is like picking up a poisonous snake in the wild. It is easy to get bitten. And so it is with Jesus' teaching about the cross, judgment, the resurrection, and so many other things. Even well-meaning disciples can take hold of Jesus' words unwisely, drawing conclusions that aren't just a few degrees off, but 180 degrees off the mark, the opposite direction that Jesus intends them to be. Here, in the middle of Mark's gospel, we turn towards the cross. We are stepping onto a dangerous, sacred path, so we need to stay alert and pay attention for what dangers lie ahead. The gospel today is both narratively and geographically at a crossroads, right in the middle of Mark's gospel, almost exactly halfway through the story. Up until now, most of the action has been Jesus working creative resistance against death-dealing forces. He heals, he feeds, he casts out demons, and so on. But now, everything is going to change. For the first time, Jesus predicts his passion. And from here on out, the primary story Mark is telling is the story of the road to the cross. And this week's story takes place on the way to the villages of Caesarea Philippi. And the action next moves to Capernaum, to Jericho, to Judah, finally to Jerusalem, a more or less direct route from Galilee to Golgotha. The action in Mark thus far has been focused on Jesus' ministry, confronting the death-dealing forces around us. He heals, he feeds, he casts out unclean spirits, all to the amazement of the crowds. And they continue to ask, "Who is this person?" And finally, in today's story, Jesus asks the questions of his disciples. Who do people say that I am? Who do you say that I am? Now, the audience that Mark wrote for and for us, we know the answer. From the very beginning of the gospel story, Mark has told us that Jesus is the Son of God, God's beloved. But the disciples are asked, Who do you say that I am? And we can wonder if they will have an answer to that question. It is important to note where this story takes place. Narratively, we are halfway through the gospel, and Mark is making the change from ministry to journey, from healing, feeding, teaching, to journey towards Jerusalem and the cross. And geographically, Jesus and the disciples are walking towards the villages of Caesarea Philippi. Now note the name, Caesarea. These are Roman settlements where Herod the Great built a temple dedicated to Rome and Emperor Augustus, the first emperor of the Roman Empire, a man who added to his title the phrase Divi Filius, Son of the Divine. And against this imperial background, Jesus asked the question, who do you say that I am? The crowds have been speculating about this for a while, and like Herod suggests that Jesus is John the Baptist returned from the dead, or maybe Elijah heralding a new age, or one of the more venerable prophets of old. But what do you say? Jesus asks the disciple. And Peter answers, and he seems to get it right. You are the Messiah. Messiah literally means the anointed one, the promised deliverer ordained and commissioned by God to save God's people. Now remember, they are walking towards Caesarea Philippi, towards a temple dedicated to Augustus, Divi Filios, to the imperial oppressors under whom the Jewish people have suffered for so long. The contrast is vivid. Against Caesar, you are the promised Messiah. And as we walk towards that profane temple, we are marching as conquerors. And sure enough, Peter gets it partly right, but mostly wrong. Jesus is indeed the Messiah, the anointed one, the deliverer, but he comes not on a war horse, but on a donkey. He comes not to dominate, but to liberate. Not to destroy, but to heal and to restore. Jesus is the anointed one, an ancient name for a monarch, but he is not a monarch in the same style as Caesar. Jesus opposes the self-centered, power-hungry forms of monarchy that is demonstrated in Caesar. Jesus' opposition is not armed with a sword. He has in mind a deeper, more subversive form of resistance. After all, opposite of a grasping, domineering fist is not a bigger fist, but rather an open, loving hand. Jesus will lead a revolution, but a revolution of love, service, and justice. On the surface, he will suffer. He will be rejected, and at last submitted to the ultimate imperial instrument of cruelty and intimidation, the Roman cross. But he will overturn the cruelty and intimidation, all violence and hate, all desecration and lack of compassion once and for all. For after 3 days, he will rise again, and a community called to love, service, justice will be born. Can you imagine how the disciples feel after hearing Jesus talk to them about his arrest, death, and resurrection? They must have been shocked. This is not what they had signed up for. They want a leader who will liberate them from the power of the Roman Empire. And true to form, Peter impulsively takes Jesus aside and rebukes him. Teacher, we have seen what you can do. You are here to conquer, not to be dishonored and killed. These ideas of Peter are not just off the mark. They are 180 degrees off the mark, an outright reversal of what Jesus intends. The snake has bitten, and Peter speaks boldly about Jesus as Messiah, but he gets it completely wrong. After this side conversation, Jesus gathers the entire crowd together so that they and us can hear what he has to say. Listen, he says to everyone, we have reached a crossroads. Anyone who thinks of this journey as a violent campaign, a moment of domination and triumph, might as well turn back right now. That is not what I am about. That is not what true deliverance is about, and so that is not what following me is about. We are not headed to conquer the temple of Caesarea Philippi. We are headed towards Jerusalem, to Golgotha, and to the cross. In a deep sense, to follow me is to take up a cross of your own, to let go of all self-centered grasping, all will of power and domination, and to suffer for the sake of the gospel of love and justice. Jesus has no illusions, and he wants us to see clearly too. Following him means suffering, not because suffering is good, but rather because confronting the powers that be, not with a sword but with love, includes carrying a cross. Following Jesus on the road he is actually walking on means following him into the shadows, out towards the margins, and down into places some will call unclean. Jesus tells us that if we want to save our life, we must lose it. That is to turn away from over-focused life of looking after ourselves, to turning towards our neighbors and even our enemies, first in love and generosity, knowing that some form of suffering will come along the way, and that ongoing resurrections and renewals will be there too. St. Augustine spoke of sin as a form of being curled inward onto yourself. And the implication is that God's redemptive power helps us to unfurl and open up to others. This is a very helpful image to get at what Jesus is talking about when he speaks about losing and saving lives. Are we living for ourselves, trying to save ourselves? Then we are curved inward like an empty fist. But when we live for others, for our neighbors, for the good news of God's love and mercy, then we are curved outward like an open, loving hand. Truly living for the sake of the gospel means recognizing God's love for each one of us, including ourselves, and thinking of how much stronger, how much more flexible, capable, and beautiful it is to have an open hand rather than closed fists, tightly grasping at nothing. Who is Jesus? The one who leads us into neighborhoods and servanthood and so into life. The journey will not be a triumphant march, and it will undoubtedly include suffering as well as moments of love, kindness, and justice. It will include its share of crosses and more than its share of resurrections. And in the end, little by little, it will uncurl our fingers. It will open our hands. It will soften our hearts. It will make us the children of God who he created us to be. It won't be easy. We stand at a crossroads, but Jesus is with us, whispering to us, "Come, follow me." Amen.